Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. As today we come to you from Columbus, Ohio. And under the guise of incredible irony, next Wednesday's show will be from East Lansing, Michigan. How about that? Now, being there, I don't know what I'm going to be able to add to what's going on in any way, shape, or form. But I'm just saying it's ironic that that's where we are next week. And I think we've talked a lot about it this week. And you should be talking about it as to what happened. Now the NCAA is going to get involved. There's a mixed opinion and feeling as to whether the NCAA should be involved. My reasoning that the NCAA should have some involvement is that you had on that long list in the Detroit Free Press, and Sean, you sent me the photo shot of the Detroit Free Press front page, that all it did was list all the names of the victims that made impact statements.
It's just amazing something simple like that that you see can have such a powerful and profound impact.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they did. And where I think the NCAA comes in is that you had, over the last 20 years, accusations, and let's face it, he's been convicted. He pled guilty, okay, of Michigan State athletes on the Michigan State campus in the office of a Michigan State doctor that claimed that they were were abused. He pled guilty. They were abused. That's where the NCAA comes in. There's nothing the NCAA can do about, you know, the legal part of it. There's nothing the NCAA can do about the USA Gymnastics part of it. But when it comes to student athletes on a campus, in a campus office, with a campus doctor, there's something they can do about that. Now, what they do, we'll see. And we'll leave it there, because there really isn't much more I can add to it along the way, because there's still more legally that might be done here. I mean, this is not over. I mean, they have him, but you know, you sense it's not over yet. And we'll find out step by step and discuss it step by step as it goes. The Baseball Hall of Fame, in a dramatic turn on the show, electing four yesterday. Chipper Jones was a marvelous player. Third base, then eventually in left field. Hit with power, drive the ball, clutch hitter. I mean, just a great, great player of what, 19 seasons? Something like that. He got 97% of the vote. Second year in the ballot, Vladimir Guerrero should have made it last year. The guy's a .318 career hitter, for crying out loud. No suspicion around him at all. Five-tool player. There wasn't a pitch that was thrown to him that he didn't think he could hit. He always thought he could hit everything. And between the Expos and the Angels, he put together a spectacular career. Jim Thome. Phillies fans know him well. Between the Indians, the Phillies, and other stops along the way in his career, he had over 600 home runs. And there wasn't a person on the planet that thought that the single most dangerous thing he ever took in his lifetime was an aspirin. All right? and he hit over 600 home runs. What did baseball mean to him? What did the Hall of Fame mean to him? He and his father, after he hit his 500th home run, took the 500th home run baseball, and they drove it to Cooperstown themselves. And when he hit his 600th career home run, he and his son drove the 600th baseball to Cooperstown. Needless to say, the people that run Cooperstown are thrilled he's now in. Great player. Trevor Hoffman closed out 600 games in his career, mostly with the Padres. With all that pressure of ending games, he did it over 600 times. Next year, he's going to be joined in the Hall by a first ballot Hall of Famer, Mariano Rivera. Rivera's going in next year. Guys that didn't make it. I really, really thought Edgar Martinez would make it. I feel strongly he should make it. He got 70.7% of the vote. Designated hitter. I don't care what, you know, you can debate back and forth, should pitchers hit, DH. Like, the DH has been a position now for 40 plus years. Right? 40 plus years. It's been a position for 44, 45 years. Isn't it about time one got in? Now, he was a third baseman early in his career with Seattle, but he was a hitting machine. No hint of anything in his career. He just hit, and hit. I think he should be in.
Yeah, quite a few were thinking this could be the first time since the very first Hall of Fame class that five could get in. It was really close.
Really, it's going to happen here at some point. Mike Mussina should be in. Yeah, I know Mike's from Montoursville. I don't care if he was from Montoursville or if he's from Allen, Texas. It wouldn't matter to me. Mike Mussina should be in.
He made a lot of progress, though. He's now up and over 60% of the vote, so that's a very good sign.
Well, look, he won 21 games his last season, for goodness sakes. You don't think he could have kept going?
one pitch away, one game from a perfect game.
Yeah, the guy was against the Red Sox. Yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to bring that up.
No. Between the Orioles and the Yankees, Mike Mussina, 8 innings and was, you know, and with all due respect to all the to all of Mike's family, he was a horse. Okay, I want that to be known as a compliment to the Mussina family. Because look, I watched his entire career between the Orioles and the Yankees. He was an ace of all aces. He'd go out there on the nights where he didn't quite have it. He'd eat up innings. On the nights he had it, you couldn't touch him. He was a great starting pitcher in his career. He should be in. I'll throw another one out there who doesn't get anywhere near the support, but I want you to think about this. Fred McGriff should be in. You think about Fred McGriff's 19-season career. Which part of Fred McGriff's 19-season career was tainted by allegations? Oh, how about none? He hit 493 home runs. 493. 493. He hit 284 for an average. He won a championship. He should be in. Okay, and I know people will talk about his political views. I don't care about his political views. I just care about it. I think you should just be evaluated on for the most part, you know, unless it's, you know, your views are one thing, but your performance is another. But Curt Schilling, between the Phillies, mostly with the Phillies, the Diamondbacks, and the Red Sox. And remember, I always talk about money on the table. Like, you know, like the biggest pressure, the biggest moments, biggest games. Look, when you're in the postseason, you're facing the better lineups. He went 11-2 in the postseason. He won some of the biggest games of the 90s and into the early to mid 2000s. Some of the biggest games he won.
Well, that bloody sock game. I mean, that's now part. I mean, that's now entrenched in baseball folklore.
Sure, but he also won for the Diamondbacks. He and Randy Johnson were co-MVPs. In the 2001 World Series, 2007, people forget he won Game 2 of the 2007 World Series against Colorado, which is the final game he ever pitched. winning pitcher in the World Series, last game he ever pitched. I mean, those are guys, I look at those four guys, they should be in. We'll get to Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens in a moment. We'll take a break. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, Forest Reed and Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, what about Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds? I think they have two more years left on the ballot. And with that in mind, I think they have no shot next year. Mariano Rivera will definitely get it next year. Then we'll see who else goes with him. Does it make Mike Mussina go? Does an Edgar Martinez go? We'll find out. I think they have no shot next year. I think their best shot, because they'll be on together, their best shot is going to be the year after. Why? That's their last year on the ballot. Because I think most people know that Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, once their Hall of Fame fates are handed to the Veterans Committee, will have zero shot. Now, what does that tell you? I mean, what does that tell you? They will have zero shot if their fate is handed to the Veterans Committee. So I think that 2020, their last year's on the ballot, which is probably the year Jeter gets in, maybe unanimously for the first time ever, that's the make-or-break moment because the Veterans Committee won't put him in. How do I feel about it? Well, how I feel about it this way. If you've got all these guys that you're facing along the way that, say, played it clean, played it straight, right? In fact, you talked to two of them last night. You were talking to Mickey Morandini, and you were talking to Mitch Williams, right?
Great time last night at the Williamsport Crosscutters Hot Stove Banquet. Gabe Sinacropi sends his best to you, and a terrific night all around. Over $6,000 was raised for the original league, Williamsport, for Little League.
Yeah, which is great. Mm-hmm. But look at all the players along the way that played it straight, played it clean, and whatever. And they're trying to compete with guys that aren't. So we could talk about the records amassed and so forth along the way. Now, you know, I mean, you know, how many home runs somebody hit, how many games somebody won, how many strikeouts somebody won. And even though neither one of them has ever tested positive for anything, the depth of suspicion around each is so deep. They each made tons of money in their career. Now, is the Hall the ultimate honor in their respective profession? Yeah. But along the way, did they win other honors like MVPs, World Series? Well, Bonds didn't. Clemens did twice. And made lots and lots and lots of money where neither one of them should have any financial problems in life. Yeah. They did all that, and they kept their careers going, possibly because of off-the-field activity. So I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, they need to be in. Hey, look, if I have a ballot, do I put them in? No, I don't. Who do I put in first? A guy like Fred McGriff, who supposedly has no... I mean, have you ever heard an accusation about Fred McGriff? Now, he's not even remotely close to the Hall of Fame on the ballot. But would I vote for him over Barry Bonds? Of course I would. Because he went out there and plugged away and just did the deal with his own... Yeah? Now, I've heard it back and forth, you know. You know, your hand-eye coordination, this, that, and the other thing. I mean, yeah. But guess what? Why is it that we frown upon the East German shot putter from 30 years ago, 40 years ago out there? Oh, yeah, okay, great. And just go, yeah, really? All right. Well, you got to feel the same way about everything you watch like that. And baseball's worked awfully hard, I mean, including the Players Association. Players Association has been very open on testing. And that's something that has to be brought into play. And that's why I couldn't do it. I mean, is that fair? Is it fair to, you know, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, if they didn't do it, still would have made it. All right, why? I mean, well, let's go back to a guy that's not in. Is anybody on the face of the earth ever said anything negative about Mike Mussina? I mean, never. So why a guy that goes out there and just does it the right way, works, trains, does it the right way, works, trains, does it the right way, that person should be in as opposed to the other person who felt that they needed to do something else to keep themselves out there or to make their career go longer. Oh, and by the way, by making their career go longer, make more money. There's not a lot of sympathy there on that because they've already won awards, Cy Young's, MVPs. They've already had long careers with great financial benefits. One of them was a part of two World Series winning teams. And, you know, and when it comes to this, whenever I hear hand-eye coordination and so forth, I want to present what I consider to be Exhibit A. And Exhibit A comes from the last 12 months. Tell me what kind of baseball player Starling Marte was before his suspension, and tell me what kind of baseball player he was after his suspension. Right? What kind of baseball player was Starling Marte before his suspension? What kind of baseball player was Starling Marte after his suspension? That would be the exhibit I would use above all. We got a lot going on in the show today. Nathan Davis later in the show about Bucknell basketball. Penn State, of course, tonight here at Ohio State at 8. We're on at 7:30. Yep, I'm looking out to my left. What do I see out the window to my left? The football stadium. I have no comment. By the way, Jaywan Sider is going to be the new running backs coach for Penn State.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motor Studio mobile today in Columbus, Ohio, as Penn State will take on Ohio State tonight. We'll have the game for you at 8 o'clock and the airtime set for 7:30 tonight here at the Shot. Very pleased for the first time to bring in from MMQB and Sports Illustrated senior writer Greg Bishop. Greg, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us. Thanks for your time.
No, thank you for having me.
All right, so the Patriots, you did a big piece on them talking about why they are hands-down Super Bowl favorites. I mean, I think everyone would agree with that. What are some elements then when you look at this football team where you sit back and say, you know what, that's why the Patriots are the best of the business in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with their three pillars, you know. In Robert Kraft, they have an owner that's willing to spend money and willing to give a great resource to the people that are working for him. And Bill Belichick, they have a very strong football mind, maybe the strongest ever, going for his eighth Super Bowl title with a team that he reconfigures pretty greatly every season, especially when you compare it to other NFL teams. And then they have Tom Brady, a quarterback. That's not a surprise. He's 40 years old. I'd be surprised if he doesn't win MVP this season. He won Super Bowl MVP last year. And he wants to play for five more years. So we'll see how that works out. I think between those three elements, they're able to just constantly configure the rest of the team around them. This year we've seen a lot of guys. We saw last week even in their game against the Jaguars that, you know, there are players that weren't there last year having a big impact, whether it's Brandon Cooks or Stephon Gilmore or any number of guys. So the Patriots' formula looks pretty familiar, and their team always looks a little different. And then it's the three guys, you know, that are in charge that, you know, sort of drive all that.
It's interesting because, I mean, Greg, you obviously have been around for a while, and you know that every team takes on its own personality. Because, as you pointed out, personnel changes, as different personality in the locker room and so forth. You mentioned the three pillars, but how are the Patriots able to always keep almost everybody on the same page all the time, despite the changing personalities that can change the personality of a team?
Yeah, I would say a couple things there. The first thing I think is that, you know, a lot of teams try to build around like a core where they'll have, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 players that they pay a lot of money to. I think the Patriots are unique in that regard in that they generally cycle most of their roster every few seasons. So there aren't a lot of guys on their team that have been there for 8, 9, or 10 years. They have a constant turnover, and I think it's higher than it is with other teams. The other thing that I wrote about in my piece this week is I think that they often look for a certain type of player. And I had one of their former receivers, a guy named Brandon Lloyd, basically tell me that he thinks they look for players who just quite aren't like starters on other teams, who will listen to what they want to do, who will take the coaching that Belichick is providing, and who will ultimately do what they're told to do because they know that if they go there, they're going to win. And he said essentially that's why Belichick's assistants have often failed when they've left New England. You know, you've seen very few of them have success, whether it was Charlie Weiss or Eric Mangini or Josh McDaniels the first time when he went to Denver. And Lloyd basically said that's because Bill has the credibility that enables him to get the most of players where they're going to have he's going to have their attention and they're going to do exactly what he says.
It is the 11th time in a playoff game that Brady has brought a team back in the fourth quarter to win. I think Eli Manning is next on that list at 5. What does it tell you about a group that doesn't ever seem to panic?
Yeah, you know, to me the most telling thing about that is like when they came back against the Jaguars the other night, I was in Foxborough and you're watching the game and, you know, they're down 10 points, the defensive for Jacksonville is playing amazing. And you just sort of expect them to come back. You know, you expect the Patriots to come back. You expect them to win. I was texting with a colleague of mine formerly at the New York Times named Ben Spiegel and saying that this feels a lot like the game last year against the Falcons when they came back and won the Super Bowl. And so to me, that says more about the Patriots' greatness than any statistic we could throw out, that, like, when they're down 10 in the fourth quarter of a playoff game against the best defense in the league, we don't just think they might win, we expect them to. And I think that starts with, you know, the way that they operate. You know, there's no sort of panic involved there. It's very much a, you know, do your job and move on to the next thing kind of, you know, ethos. And, you know, I don't think it hurts to have Tom Brady either, slinging the passes back there and, you know, making sure those comebacks are completed.
If I were to look at the end of last season going into training camp, the 8 best players the Patriots have: Rob Gronkowski, Dante Hightower, and Julian Edelman would have been 3 of those 8. Do you think that's fair? All right. And
yeah.
So, what does it tell you that they lost all 3 of them of their top 8, and it's still like, okay, the ball keeps rolling?
Yeah, no, exactly. And to me, that the Patriots are maybe the most adaptable team in the history of sports because it's the NFL over Brady's career has evolved, you know, 3 different times. It was a lot of precision, kind of short passing, kind of dominated the day. You know, it became more of a vertical passing league, so the Patriots did that. Now completion percentage and accuracy is the big thing, and Brady's had his 2 most accurate seasons ever the last 2 years. And I think what you saw this year is just sort of that adaptability in action. You know, you lose Edelman, Super Bowl hero, amazing catch, great year last year, and they'd already traded for Brandon Cooks with New Orleans. So then Cooks is really fast, so they incorporated deep element into their offense that they didn't have before. You know, Brady gets banged up. He missed more practices, his people told me this year, than he ever had before. So they switch away some from that, and they start to become a running team. You know, a guy like Deion Lewis, who watched them go out and sign Mike Gillisley and Rex Burkhead this offseason, just picks up where he left off in the playoffs last year, and he's got over 130 yards from scrimmage in each of their last four games. And so, yeah, to me, that just speaks to the way the Patriots operate. We always talk about how cold-blooded they are, or how, you know, there's sort of this machine involved. But I think what we miss sometimes is that, you know, Bill Belichick changes everything, and it's not just season to season. It's week to week. It's game to game. It's quarter to quarter. And, you know, they're not afraid. They'd run the ball down the stretch quite a bit, and then last Sunday they threw it a ton against the Jaguars. So I think that makes them harder to beat because they're malleable. You know, they're able to morph and form and be different based on the situations, and that makes them, you know, dangerous against any kind of team and not really vulnerable to many.
And the reason I point out, those are three legit, I mean, Hightower's a legit big-time player. We know what Gronk is. You talked about what Edelman means to what they do offensively. We all know when a team wins, people would say, oh, what a great coaching job. Winning does that. Sometimes your best coaching jobs happen when either you're not winning or you've had to go through this. I felt this is one of his better coaching jobs because, I mean, that's talent that you lost that you had to overcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's Hightower is one of their better defensive players. Gronkowski, obviously, you know, probably the best single player on their team outside of Brady. And you just see them, you know, be able to, like, get a guy in there and make up for it. And, you know, I think that's partly why they bring so many new players in every year, is because, you know, they're able to, like, always catch guys kind of at the right time where they have something to prove. And I think we really saw that this year with James Harrison, you know. There was a guy who was unhappy in Pittsburgh who seemed to be really at the end of what I think will be a Hall of Fame career. You know, he's asking for his release, and 2 days later he's the most hated rival. And not only did he sign with New England, but he played really well. And last week against the Jaguars, he pretty much was renting an Airbnb in their backfield. And so, to me, that just felt like very Patriots-ish. And I think that, you know, what's familiar is the pattern. What's different about it is every year it's different people, you know. So some years it's other people. This year it's Brandon Cook, it's Stephon Gilmore, it's James Harrison. And they just, they're able to, like, use Brady as sort of this, you know, he's the sun and everything rotates around him.
That's exactly right. I want to ask you about Brady for a moment. At the age of 40, what, in your opinion, Greg, doesn't he do as well? Conversely, because he has experience, where is he actually a little bit better?
Yeah, you know what's interesting with Tom is that since he started his training regimen, he's actually a little faster now than he used to be, you know, even when he was younger. I think the thing that hurts him more now, that hurt him this season, is just that his body's, you know, 40 years old. I mean, he was basically playing through an Achilles injury from mid-November on, and he had a pretty serious bicep injury about 2 weeks before the end of the regular season. Now the Patriots would never talk about these things, but these are things I've heard from Brady's people. And so, you know, I think that limited his ability to make some throws, especially the deep stuff they were hitting on with Cooks. I think that means that time, if he calls his Facebook show Tom versus Time, I think Time got a couple good blows this year, and I think that speaks just to being 40 years old. I think what he's better at now is just, you know, he hasn't had a serious injury. You know, they kept him out of a game since he tore his ACL, and that was like quite a while ago. And so, you know, I think he's able to, you know, sort of understand what they're doing better, to be able to step up in the pocket and make all those kinds of throws. And I think that, you know, ultimately, you know, he's just the kind of quarterback where he can basically serve as Belichick on the field. So I would say he's probably better in almost everything he's doing, but his body's not the same as it was. And to me, that's always going to be, you know, the battle at the end of a guy's career. But with Tom, it's interesting because he is older than most guys are. He is playing longer than most guys do. And time wins always, so we'll just see how long it takes.
Greg, you and I both know that, you know, matchups mean so important. It means so much in games. So when you look, at least initially, at this Philadelphia-New England matchup, what sticks out to you about the matchup part of it?
Yeah, you know, I think the Eagles have more of a chance than most people do, and I think that's because they're really strong up front. You know, they're strong up front on offense, and the Patriots have had, you know, some struggles like stopping the run this year, and they're strong up front on defense. And the teams that have beaten Brady in the postseason, when you look back at, like, the two Super Bowls he lost, you know, which were both against the Giants, I mean, the blueprint for doing that is to be able to get pressure on him without blitzing a lot, so that you can have maximum guys in coverage you play press man on the corners and, you know, have guys kind of helping them behind. And the only way to make that successful is that the four guys up front have to be able to get pressure on their own. I think you saw that from Jacksonville in three quarters that they sort of flummoxed him. They were getting pressure, and they were getting it without having to blitz a lot. And so, to me, Philadelphia has some players like that. You know, they've really, like, retooled their defensive line. Fletcher Cox, to me, is one of the better interior players in the league. You know, they added Barnett in the draft this year. He had a big strip sack last week. And I just think that they are capable of doing that. Now, it's still Tom Brady and it's still the Patriots, so I'm not saying the Eagles are going to win, but I think when you look at the matchups, you could, like, foresee a few scenarios where that's possible.
Greg, an absolute pleasure. It's great to have you on the show. I hope it's the first of a few times we can get a hold of you because of your insight, and we appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Greg Bishop, MMQB from SI.com, joining us on the show today. We'll come back. Eagles perspective in the next half hour. Nathan Davis, final half hour, as we continue from Columbus. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, welcome. Great to have you with us on the show today. Had to really warm the suit's heart to hear Greg Bishop call James Harrison a potential Hall of Famer.
Mm. I've always thought of him as a potential Hall of Famer, even after he left the team for New England. That has not wavered, in my opinion, whether he's a Hall of Famer or not. First ballot Hall of Famer? No, but I think eventually he's got a good chance.
Here's the issue I have with the Hall of Fame, in terms of whether a guy's a Hall of Famer or not. At least in baseball, each individual is allowed to vote for 10 people. If you want to vote for 3, you can vote for 3. If you want to vote for 10, you can vote for 10. The Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I realize that, you know, and I believe we have a chance of getting Jerry Kramer on, right, next week, sounds like.
Very good shot that we will have him on toward the end of next week. It could be either 24 to 48 hours where he could receive some very good news from Dave Baker, who runs the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton.
Yeah, well, I hope he does, because I hope he makes it. Because, for example, you know, we've had Andy Russell on the show. Jerry Kramer and Andy Russell are two players that had Hall of Fame careers. You hear sometimes that the argument is that, well, there are too many Steelers from an era. There are too many Packers from an era. The Hall of Fame is an individual honor. It has nothing to do with how many, you know, if all 22 Green Bay Packers that started in 1967 are all exemplary and among the best of all time in their positions, then all 22 should be in. If eight are, then 8 should be in. If 3 are, then 3 should be in. And only 5 get in per year. And that's to me is the issue with the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, does it make it more difficult? Yes. Does it make it an even, I think, greater honor? Yes. But I wouldn't mind seeing it maybe expanded out to maybe, I don't know, 70 years, something like that, where you can give them the opportunity to vote for and to get maybe, you know, two extra spots every year, because there have been so many players that have played. And James Harrison, for example, you know, it depends on, you know, who's up at a particular year, who's been on the waiting list for a while. I mean, you expect certain guys from this era, like Troy Polamalu, should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He should be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
And an intangible that works against and for some players too, depending on how many are eligible at a specific position. And that's right. That's definitely right. been right. apparent the last few years with wide receiver. And with Terrell Owens,
I don't know. That one I'm not seeing. Okay.
That's just the first name that popped into my head. Whether you think he goes in or should not go in, no, that's definitely up for debate.
He's got numbers all over the lot. That I do understand. I understand the numbers part of it, but don't know. I'd have to think long and hard about that one. I would have to think long and hard about it. But, I mean, again, it's the numbers. You know, if you're only allowed five in per year, how crowded is the field when you're eligible? Because the field isn't going to become less crowded as time goes. But it had to warm the suit's heart, because the suit firmly believed. I believe the suit thinks that Jimmy Smith from the 70s should also be in at wide receiver, but that's do you get a little concerned about that stuff?
Yes, I do.
I'm telling you, Lauren Tave should be in. Okay. Yeah. No, but you know, but like Andy Russell should be in. Jerry Kramer should be in. But see, here's the problem I have with that. Are they fading from memory? Yeah, you got a whole group of voters that are in there now. There's a lot of, you know, obviously it's not a young group in there. But I'm wondering, as time goes, I mean, will these guys be forgotten? You know, I watched Jerry Kramer play. I watched Andy Russell play. Man, they were great players. But, all right. Well, we talked about the baseball thing already, about, you know, Bonds and Roger Clemens. And again, my stance is quite simple. Look at Starling Marte's performance before he got suspended, and look at Starling Marte's performance after he got suspended. 180s. That's a 180. So if you're wondering what kind of effect PEDs can have, I would use that as an example of the effect it can have. We talked a lot yesterday about the NBA and the 1%. This is the Supreme Court ruling on the New Jersey case, which they think is going to be this spring. They're going to rule on it. If they rule in favor of New Jersey and overturn the federal statute on it, man, suddenly the door goes wide open. Now, is it a great boom for states? It can be, remember though. Might somebody who was playing the lottery, might they then instead say, you know what, I think I'm going to place a wager on the Eagles and the Steelers? Might somebody who was going to a casino and enjoy slot machine gambling, might they take some of that money and we're going to do sportsbook instead? But it's going to be, if it were to happen, the door is open for the leagues, with the 1% part, to have a windfall. And it's also the possibility, because the states would be in charge of it, that the states have the door open to a windfall. As I've said before, Vermont, California, Colorado, and Washington, they aren't progressive states for what they've done. They do what they want the money.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.